I have today with us Dr. Allison Kay, and she's gonna tell us her story and her methods that she have found during this life experience how to do natural therapy. So thank you for being here with me today.
Yeah, it's my honor, Nadia. I'm happy to be here with your smiling, lovely self.
Thank you. So tell me about how what happened in your life, a little bit of your bio, and how everything came to be you're now the expert in healing and some other ways, right?
All right, so I can make this long or short, and for the sake of helping people who are out there listening, I'm going to make it short. I've always been this way, and what I've done my whole life is understand how better to use this ability I have to connect in with higher consciousness and to help others do that within themselves. So the long story short is I lived in Asia for 10 years studying how energy works and how the mind works after I'd already been a meditation teacher in the States and I'd already been running energy medicine and wellness sessions. I was like in my second session my second client, and I was doing this alongside being a teacher in the public school system. And I asked, okay, this is great. How do I get even more robust results? And so one thing came to another, and I had combined the desire to make more money while I was okay with, you know, basic housing, basic car, organic produce, a massage a week. That was all I was asking for. And on a teacher's salary with slight student loans for my master's to pay back, it wasn't easy. And that was not okay with me. I am not someone who's ever understood struggle. It's not okay struggling or suffering. As a matter of fact, nowadays I say to people, if you're addicted to the struggle paradigm, I'm not the right mentor for you. So anyway, I ended up finding out about the international school system. So I became a teacher and an administrator, accepting a job over in Taiwan, working with the traditional Chinese, because instead of going to Brazil or going to the Middle East, I decided to go over there, for example, accepting that job offer because I wanted to go to the seat of who seemed to me to understand how energy flows and how to work with meditation and consciousness. So I spent 10 years there working full time as a teacher and administrator, pretty high up. And eventually also, not eventually, alongside that, running energy medicine and wellness coaching sessions for other fellow expats and local Taiwanese. And so I continued that all the way through. And then I came back here after a decade. And I know that one of the things I do a lot is I see clients who come in to work with me. It's one of the most frequent things is I don't even always know this. They don't always tell me this on the intake call when they first are invited to work with me after we talk about what they want. They're on antidepressants or on anti-anxiety meds. And somewhere along the lines of working with me, they either say, without my knowing that they were on them, Dr. Allison, I'm now no longer, it's been 5 weeks and I've not been taking my antidepressants. So the work that I am able to do within somebody's consciousness and mind-body connection,
yes,
is able to release the heaviness, the density that is kind of like, if you think of it like the back of the house consciousness. Mm-hmm. We could talk about that if you want. I can go pretty complex and pretty in depth. I train vibrational upgrade, the system I develop practitioners, and it's a system of energy medicine and mindfulness. And it's a 6-month training. In mm-hmm. fact, really it's a 9-month training because first 3 months they have to clear themselves. So there's a lot of different techniques that I can teach and talk about, but to simplify it, the old thoughts at the back of the house consciousness that you don't hear, but you're making your daily choices from. So it's not thoughts that you hear, like when you look at somebody and you go, oh, I love their jewelry. Mm-hmm. It's not that kind of a thought. It's either a subconscious or unconscious thought. So sub means under the conscious mind, so you don't hear it, or unconscious means not conscious, so you don't hear it. But there's all these beliefs, there's all this karma, there's all these imprints from our parents and our lineage, there's all this conditioning, there's all these old contracts and past life traumas and this lifetime traumas that end up being a conclusion or a belief or locked into our subconscious. So it's in our bodily tissue relevant to whatever chakra it relates to. So if you had sexual abuse when you were growing up as a young girl, that tends to lock into almost all the chakras, but in particular the bottom three. Mm-hmm. So then parts of like your digestive system might be upset, or you might have tight hips, or you might have your legs or feet you may not pay a lot of attention to. You may be up in your head a lot. So by clearing all of that out, there is a natural, you're meant to be joyous. I'm meant to be joyous. That's our natural set point. Mm-hmm. And then all that other stuff comes in, and we then up as an adult start to have to deal with that. So, and even as kids nowadays. So by clearing all of that stuff out and activating the natural therapy is the name of this show, right?
Yes.
So the natural set point of everybody's mind, body, and spirit system is to be joyous and uplifted. So by clearing that stuff out, people naturally get to their joy, and they can naturally, without my even, like sometimes they'll tell me, like I said, I'm on antidepressants, Dr. Allison, and one of my goals to in working with you is to come off of them. Great. Other times they don't tell me, they take themselves off the medication like 5-ish or 6 weeks into working with me. And they say, Dr. Allison, I've been off of my meds now for 2 weeks or 3 weeks because they are getting so much energy from me in the healing sessions. They're having so much release from within themselves, mm-hmm. so that more of their own energy can start to flow and their own system takes over, that the antidepressants aren't needed.
Yeah. So you will say, like, when a person comes to you, you don't directly, you let the body flows slowly till it's recovered for them to get out of medication. Like, you support also medication from doctors when it's needed.
Oh, yeah. Right? Particularly the antipsychotics, because those mm-hmm. have the most enduring effects, because they're geared towards the mind. They have even more of a hooking, what I'm going to call imprint. Mm-hmm. So if you think of a snowflake, mm-hmm. like a snowflake, if you cut out like a piece of paper and you end up with a snowflake, and then you put it on another piece of paper and use a pencil and you kind of etch through it so that mm-hmm. you end up with that snowflake pattern underneath, or you're making a snow angel. I know I live in Florida, you're in San Francisco, so neither one of us deal with snow. But the point is I'm trying to give you an impression of an imprint.
Yeah.
So that all chemical pharmaceuticals, let me back up. Even in our medical history in the United States, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that was all homeopathic. Mm-hmm. So there were no chemicals, there was no pharmaceutical industry. And around when it started to get created, the homeopathic remedy is like the snake bite. So what the antidote, the cure for the snake bite is taking a little bit of that venom from the snake bite and putting it in the cure along with other things. That's homeopathic, when you have a little bit of the thing, of the problem in the solution. So then when the chemicalization of the pharmaceutical industry began to come on board, it seems to me, and I'm the only one who I've ever heard say this, that there is still some initial imprint, or it might just actually be the natural healing process, mm-hmm. which this is how it happens. So if someone is going through the pattern of depression and I'm actively working with them on clearing out all the causes, that will likely get worse before it gets better. Like a fever peaks before the fever breaks.
Yeah.
Like a zit has to come to the surface of the skin before they can pop it.
Pop it, yes.
Yeah, so there's a natural way that our bodies purge out toxins, whether mental, yeah. emotional, or physical. So it seems like that natural healing component is retained, it was retained in chemicals, so that the chemical alone leaves an imprint in the system that I've seen myself have to help people detox their system from. Mm-hmm. But when it's antipsychotics or anti-anxiety meds, it's an even stronger imprint. So absolutely, always I have, if they'll choose it, they don't always choose it, work with their doctor to slowly decrease the dosage mm-hmm. of the antipsychotic or work with cutting it in half and then cutting it in another half. So doing that under the guidance of a doctor is way more important than, let's say, if you were coming off of statins or high blood pressure meds. I mean, you'd want to do that with the guidance of a doctor too. But yes, there's a dance that has to happen, particularly with antidepressants, it seems like, to go really slow and careful with coming off of them so that we can successfully restore your system back to the innate wiring it has for joy.
So why was your personal experience, or why you said, oh, I will go to this path, or why I want to learn more about healing? What did motivate you to go that way?
I always have been like this, Nadia. I didn't, it's funny because doing another interview, I think from like my second or third book, when people would ask me that, interviewers would ask, like yourself would ask mm-hmm. me that question, I'd be like, I wouldn't know how to answer it. And way back, like when having my first PR firm, they were like, yeah, you're in America, you have to have either a story about why you do what you do, or some personal victory you've had that is why you do what you do. And I don't have either. I grew up walking out in the woods with my older brother. Mm-hmm. He would walk ahead of me, like stepping on the broken limbs and breaking broke old dead trees and stumps and sticks, and I like destroying and playing like the boy does. And then I'd be like connecting with the plants and the animals and the water and feeling and like the caterpillars and just feel this total interconnectedness of everything.
Yeah.
And my intuition has always been so strong that like maybe three times in my late teens and particularly early 20s, mm-hmm. I was getting guidance to do something and I didn't listen to it. And there were just crap results I had to deal with because I didn't listen to my intuition. It just mm-hmm. was awful. So I learned really early on that I have this guiding voice in me. Beautiful. And it is best to listen to it. Yeah. Yeah. It'll save me a lot of pain and struggle and suffering if I listen to it, no matter how much my mind doesn't want to do the thing,
yes.
no matter how much my mind is resisting and wants to stay comfortable. Like, I'm not like that. Like, I get uncomfortable mm-hmm. once I get comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm not, but the natural set point from the ego mind is to prefer comfort. So we all have this ego mind in us, and it's given to us to help us work on the physical plane, to live in a building, to walk on the earth, to drive a car, to interact with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So if like in psychology, it's understood that we have obviously the five senses, but they have thresholds. So I can only hear to a certain point. I can only see to a certain point. I can only taste to a certain point. If I could do more than that point, I'd go crazy with all of the actual data beyond the physical, the yeah. metaphysical, with all that's really there to see and perceive. So thank God we've had these thresholds put on us so that we can safely, easily manage life on planet Earth in a physical body. So these practices of meditation, it's known to open it up just a little bit. The longer you meditate, you get to hear a little bit more, just a tiny bit more. You get to perceive and see just a tiny bit more, way gradually over time with the practice of meditation. What I'm saying though is this ego mind was given to us as a part of our mind, body, spirit system so that it keeps us safe. It doesn't like the unknown. So if we're in a jungle and there's lions and tigers and bears, oh my, do I fight or do I flight? Do I take flight? So that's mm-hmm. the fight or flight adrenal hormonal response when we're faced with danger and we think, do I fight it or do I take flight?
Yeah.
It's our oldest wiring. It's our most animalistic reptilian brain wiring, but it's still functioning here now. So if you have stress, a stressor, like let's say you perceive you're walking down the street in San Francisco at night, you're alone, you're a woman, you're coming out of a club, you dress kind of great, and you're alone on the street and a guy in a dark outfit's walking towards you. Oh no, do I fight or do I flight, take flight? Mm-hmm. So that automatically comes up in you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're going for change, if you want to engage in a new career or take a new revenue, create a new revenue stream, your ego mind doesn't want to face the new because it's unknown. So it automatically perceives threat. So it wants to pull you back from the change. So that is one of the most frequent causes of depression. Because whenever we're given inspiration to do something new, our soul actually physiologically releases more vitality or energy to use to create something new. If we don't listen to that, what's understood now from the very first woman who applied energy medicine understanding to Western medicine, she studied this in Christian Northrop, and the energy ends up getting, so it gets released from about the third chakra, the upper belly, the start of the digestive tract, that extra energy to do something new. And if we say, because our ego mind doesn't want to do it, we say no out of fear and we push it back down, we're depressing or deep pressing that energy. So we end up like depressed and lethargic. Yes. Mm-hmm. In heavy. So learning to live, learning to hear, to perceive our connection with our higher self, not just our ego mind. We manage our ego mind like a dog on a leash. And then we learn to perceive our intuitive guidance and then have the courage to say yes to what our guidance is telling us to do. It's like this innate wiring feedback loop to keep us joyous and to create our best lives ever.
Something that you just mentioned that I enjoyed is when you said that it was always something like a guidance. And I do believe the same, like you said, that when we don't hear our internal voice, sometimes that's when the illness start happening in different part of our bodies. I agree with you with that. And also, the idea just left my mind, but you were mentioning like,
Nadia, it's okay. What's happening right now is, yes, I'm training you to the vibrations, the higher vibrations, and what I was just talking about. Mm-hmm. When I speak over time, this has become, I'm clearing you. It's like a transmission. So I'm not just using words, because my whole life is dedicated towards looking at something, clearing it where mm-hmm. it's dysfunctional, and elevating it to where it's the best. And everybody I work with, and I've been doing it for decades, and I've been doing it to groups of people on the phone or on Zooms. Beautiful. My system is like learning how to play a flute. I've learned the instrument, you know, and so nice. You're getting cleared right now, and the listeners too. I mean, you may be aware that you're feeling a bit more spacey. Yes. You may have even had some tingling in your body, or might feel hotter somewhere. You may want to stop driving or stop doing something other than listening to this, because you're getting expansiveness cued into your system, and you might notice you sleep better tonight, and you might notice that you wake up with new ideas tomorrow. I don't have to even do active clearings that, you know, oh my God, she's doing that energy medicine on me, mm-hmm. on this belief I have, I'm not good enough, or I'm not worthy. In my more formal format, I train my practitioners to use to clear people. I'm just speaking and you're getting it. So it's not you're bad that thought went out of your head. It's I'm activating other parts of your consciousness instead of those higher parts.
Thank
and you're
you.
Responding. But that feels like a spaciness. You get spacey.
Yes, I do.
You need more space, right? We all need more space in our heads. Those pressing thoughts of got to do this next, got to tend to that next.
I agree with you, yes. So it was about meditation. Like you were saying, to connect with the source or the energy, whatever we want to call it, and we can expand more and we can start trusting ourselves more. So I would like you to give maybe a little tip to our listeners. How can they start a little meditation, or if they are suffering any pain outside right now, like what is something, a little tip that you can provide or not share for us to start listening or letting?
Yes. Take your piece. I'm going to teach you a pranayama. So in yoga, there's eight limbs. Only one of those eight limbs are body postures. Five of them about working with the mind. So body postures are one. Working with the mind is five. So that's six of the eight limbs in yoga. One of the other limbs is pranayama, which are breathing exercises. I'm going to teach you one. that has been used to take people right out of an anxiety attack or a panic attack. But if you use it daily, preventatively, increasingly, it will benefit you in so many physical ways, and also instantly calming, and will help you expand quicker. You're like into the relaxed, expansive consciousness I was just talking about. So following along, I'm describing this so you listeners can do it too. Take your peace fingers.
Okay.
So your index, the fingers you make your peace sign with, and put them in between your eyebrows. Now open up your pinky and open up your thumb. Plug your right nostril with your thumb and inhale with your left nostril. Plug your left nostril, unplug your right, exhale through your right nostril only. Inhale through your right nostril. Now you haven't done that yet, Nadia, hold on.
Oh.
Stay on the right side, and now you're gonna inhale through the right nostril. Keep your left nostril plugged while you inhale on the right. Now plug the right, unplug the left, exhale through the left. Keep right nostril plugged, inhale through the left nostril. Now plug left nostril, open right, exhale right. Inhale right. Plug right, unplug left, exhale left, good. Inhale left. Plug left, unplug right, exhale right. Inhale right. Plug right, unplug left, exhale left. Let's do one more. Inhale left. Plug left, unplug right, exhale right. Inhale right. Plug right, unplug left, exhale left. Okay, you can drop your hand down. And if you're listening to the podcast and you didn't follow it, just rewind back to the part where I began, because it does take a minute to understand. So when you go from left to right, and then back from right to left, that's one round. If you do 10 rounds one time a day, that's the prescription.
Okay.
If you are really going through a stressful time in your life, do it twice a day. So I also want to give you this tidbit. If we can meditate, you asked a question about meditation and a quick technique, right?
Yes.
So if there's this tradition that's 5,000 years old called meditation, and when they say the basic premise of Buddhism, which is meditation, where it comes from, Buddhism, every human mind has neuroses. Here are the tools to work with your particular flavor of neuroses. So another way to say that is, well, let's look at it this way. If this practice of meditation is meant to show us how to become able to observe our thoughts. You sit there, and everybody thinks they suck at meditation at first, especially Americans. I can't do this. That is meditation. When you come up from the cushion and you say, I can't do this, my mind won't go quiet. Your mind doesn't go quiet. I mean, mine does. Mine started to after like 5 years of it. In the second year, you get more space between one thought and then the next. But if you sit down expecting to have a quiet mind in the first 20 minutes of the first year of your practice, that's setting yourself up with false expectations. So it's not that you suck at meditation, it's you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. But the point is here now, that is, if there is a practice that's set up to help you quiet your mind,
okay,
which is starting from learning how to observe your mind, thinking, pull off the thoughts, and come back to the breath, and let the thoughts float by as if a leaf on a river's current. And the next time that you may have five thoughts go by you don't catch, and then you shake yourself loose, all of a sudden you realize Oh yeah, there I am again. There's another thought. Thinking. Pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath and let the thoughts float by as if a leaf on a river's current. Inhaling. So that's me using Buddha's most frequently taught meditation technique. It's available on my website. You can use it until you get yourself, like in the fourth week, able to stabilize your practice. The point here is eventually you get to the point of observing your thinking. If you can even do that, that means we're not just our thoughts. So another tip is, as you go about your day and your mind may be saying something to you that's causing you to feel low, snap out of it. You literally use your fingers and go, shake your head. Mm-hmm. Oh, I hear you. But what if that's not even true? Mm-hmm. So the next step is, so first is be aware that you're not your thoughts. The second step is question your thoughts. That I could stop there, but I'm going to give it to you. The third step is you could even redirect it and ask it a question. Okay, I hear you, complaining mind, that things are hard right now. So what can I do to have it be better? So now that's bringing in some Tibetan Buddhist techniques or Western cognitive behavioral psychology, where you actually question the fear or question the lower thought. And so you address it and then you redirect it and ask, okay, so how do I improve this? How does this get any better?
Yeah, thank you. Also, you know, that with all this COVID and all this depression that suicidals have increased in the mental community as well. So I would like you to give a message to our listeners about if they are feeling even suicidal. I heard 200% rate has increased of people that are taking their life. And maybe this is the podcast they need to listen today for them to get out of this. And they are listening to you. So I would like you to give them a little something to look for you or to any motivation, anything that can help them, or I don't know, any words that you have for any people.
How much time do I have so I can gauge how to answer?
We have around 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell a story. As a classroom teacher, I was over, as I said, in Taiwan. And so I had a mixture of students. Some came back in first grade because their parents returned from the United States, getting their college degree, starting their first job, and they went back to Taiwan. Other students were much more Americanized and didn't come back to Taiwan until like they were in junior high or high school. So I was in front of a classroom of a mix of very traditionally Chinese, more Taiwanese, and much more Americanized. And I remember around 2008 to 2010, I started to notice at the high school level that there was more talk about suicide. It was more like 2009, 2010. And I was surprised mm-hmm. because, I mean, these were really elite kids. I mean, the school was not cheap that I taught at. The parents had left their home country, gotten educated in the United States, had their first job in the United States, and went. I mean, these were diplomats' kids. These were high-level kids that would all come back to America to go to Ivy League themselves. So I taught meditation to these students, by the way, and it's on this, in a side class I created called Global Psychology. And I came to feel and sense that, okay, so I know historically both the Chinese and the Japanese have used mass suicides as a technique. So like over on Angel Island outside of San Francisco, there was a whole group of Japanese immigrants who wanted to get in. That you can look up that story. I know that in some ancient Chinese stories I heard that there were suicide use. And so I thought of it as that. But then I came back to the States in 2010. I mean, none of my students committed suicide. They seemed to be talking about it a little bit more. I could hear murmurings. There was nobody I was worried about. So there was no personal story I can tell you. I just realized that all of a sudden, like it was the beginning of the emo, where it was becoming trendy be depressed. Okay. And that's what I came to understand it as. That's why I'm treating it so nonchalantly or so lightly, seemingly. Like I'm just saying, oh yeah, they talked about depression. I mean, about suicide. I'm not approaching it like that. It was trendy. That's how I came to understand it. It was the beginning of the emos. But it was also the beginning of the indigo children, who are just more sensitive. So then I came, and I'll talk about that in a minute. So then I came back to the States in 2010. And my niece, one of my nieces, who's really successful, she's a district attorney for the attorney. She's an, what is she? An attorney deputy for the attorney general of the state of Florida. Really successful. Played soccer, had loads of friends, was popular. And I said something about this I had found about the suicide to her. And she said, yeah, Auntie, every one of my friends, you know, either talk about, have talked about it or tried it. So the only reason why I tell you how successful she was is because nonetheless, kids here in America were talking about it too. So it was trendy. It was a trend. Now, coming to the work I've been doing, in 2011, I was approached by a massive online radio station asking me to talk, to have a radio show about, or a podcast about the Mayan predictions for 2012. I hadn't been focusing on that. I don't know why they reached out to me, but they did. And so I took 48 hours. I listened to my intuition, and it was a big yes. So I began to interview experts and scientists, some from my last, my first book, the book I had already written. So I wanted to bring them onto my podcast. And then others were scientists talking about what the December 21st, 2012 date meant. I ended up on a cruise. I was a meditation teacher and the energy medicine practitioner with a bunch of experts about the Mayan galactic
date.
And we went to Chichen Itza, the main, what some would call like the main Mayan ruin. And I had already taken a VIP client on a trip there the year before. And I was barefoot the year before. But this year on December 21st.
Take me next time.
Okay. I that's exactly what I do. And into all sorts of different ruins, not just Chichen Itza, some of the lesser well-known ones. My feet were barefoot too on December 21st, 2012. And our group had gotten special permission to work with a Mayan shaman at the pyramids. We're all dressed in white. And I had my feet barefoot and there was like lightning coming up from the earth. It was phenomenal. So both between experts interviewing them and then my own intuitive sense and then my feeling at Chichen Itza. And then every night when I stood under the stars, I began to perceive what a special time we were in. So from 2012 to 2032 is a 20-year window. My second book is all about this. My second book is Vibrational Upgrade, A Conspiracy for Your Bliss. So this 20-year window has the old paradigm falling apart before the new one can get built. So later on, 2 years ago for a birthday present, I took myself and another VIP client outside of Mexico City to the Teotihuacan ruins. And we hired a native guide and I asked him, knowing what I already knew now, what do you locals know here about the old paradigm and the new one that December 21st, 2012 cut the dates? He said, well, the old era is about or was about destruction. The new era is about construction. So there is, with the indigo children, there is an increasing sensitivity and an increasing awareness of those five senses that are now, because of where we're headed, heightened. So you can feel more what other people are feeling. You can sense more what other people are thinking, unlike 10 years ago, unlike even 5 years ago. You can now have a sense of somebody, you're thinking about them and all of a sudden they text. Because we're the physical 3D life is not so solid and real as it once was like in the World War II veterans generation. We're now moving into a new paradigm that's a lot more understanding of energy, not just the physical. So a lot of what's rebalancing is that which has been destructive to humanity. Mm-hmm. So we move into an era of being much more constructive. And that includes where there's been abuses of power. That includes where there has been an overfocus on materialism that's taken away from the inner wealth and inner well-being, the interior. Yes. So, yeah. So the kids or people who are in, so COVID is for that. What I have come to understand is, would you agree, Nadia, that people don't tend to choose to change unless there's a crisis that forces them to make the choice, okay, I have to change?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so you remember me, like how absolutely confident you were with that answer. You remember how I said before, in my early 20s, I had a couple of times when I didn't listen to the guidance and I saw how much difficulty was created. So I have proactively chosen to change by listening to that guidance. Yet people seem, instead of choosing what needs to change to actively change it, proactively, as they're hearing the guidance or ahead of a crisis, they require the crisis. So it seems like, so there's been different ways of people waking up. Some people did it around 2010, prior to 2012. Then a whole bunch of people woke up around 2012. And when I say woke up, I mean started to become more sensitive, wanting to learn more about spirituality, wanting to learn more about meditation, increase in yoga classes, increase in learning about the chakras, wanting to light more candles, wanting to be more spiritual, doing that kind of exploration. But what I also saw from people coming to me and needing help and wanting my work was that they had like three crises. They'd lose somebody they loved, they'd lose their job, they'd end up divorced. I mean, it would be three things all at once. So I found that fascinating. So the nature of our times has been to proactively address internally what we've been ignoring. And here in America in particular, I think a lot of it has to do with the Catholic religion, and God bless it. But I know I've had a whole slew of Catholic clients laying on my tables, and there's this extra like discomfort that people have with looking inside their heads, as if there's like this. And I see this with everybody, or the majority, excuse me, the majority of people, if they haven't opened up yet, they run from their mind as if there's a boogeyman or a monster under the bed. If they were to look inside, they'd find out they were crazy. Yeah, now work with it. So instead of going in and looking within, they keep buying more or scrolling on Facebook more or watching, playing more video games or shopping more or having like more sex or going out and drinking more, like perpetuating stuff on the outside because they're running from listening to the inside. And then what's needed is crisis. Yeah. To draw the person to inside to address themselves or medicate. But even after the medication, you're saying, hey, no, I wanted to address this without the medication. So there was another group of people waking up like around 2016 and then around 2018. So there's been these waves of groups of people, but I guess not enough had woken up by 2019, or pardon me, by 2020. So some people, so I, when COVID first started, I was already working with clients over in the Philippines and in China and Hong Kong, right as it was starting over there. I had a client who's like best man at their wedding. He got COVID and the worst strand of it. And I was working on him in the hospital. She was paying me for that. So I watched, and then I had a client in Germany. So I watched it start to come across the planet.
Wow.
And people were asking me. And so I lived in Taiwan during SARS, which was another epidemic, but Taiwan kept it contained. And I could go into that story, but I won't. Go to my YouTube channel under my name and you can look up the whole playlist for COVID. There's a lot of daily healing myself and my practitioners did April through June. And I started off with an Equinox one because it was on the Equinox in March that I did the first Facebook Live. And we did daily Facebook Live sending healing energy to different locations around the planet that needed it the most, as well as the frontline workers, as well as concerns about money, as well as grief. So go to my YouTube channel to find that. But the point here and now is people have been asking me, what do I take? How do I take COVID-19? What do I think it's happening for? And I've been talking about this since 2011. I came back to the States with the mission from Asia of we could reduce our suffering in the West if we would look inside and work with our consciousness. When I lived in Asia, I would like travel to Thailand on vacation in between semesters for the Chinese New Year break, or Bali or Cambodia. And there were, and in Taiwan where I lived daily, there were monks in robes driving their scooters from the market, getting their fresh veggies. And I'd go to the market on my scooter to get my fresh veggies. I'd be in tents in Bangkok, and there was a monk holding a cigarette and a cell phone in his orange robe. I was like, oh my God, they smoke, they're on phones, wow! You know, I could handle them shopping. But that, all the temples and the monasteries and the statues of Buddha and Guanyin, what that did for me was, as a Westerner, as it does for most Westerners, Buddha symbolized peace. Mm-hmm. But Buddha also symbolized for me, because of the work I had already been doing, already a meditation teacher, already working with consciousness and energy, moving over there, I came to understand there is this constant reminder in the East of the work is inner. I can work with what's in my head. Contrast that against what I said about the West, particularly America, the running from looking inside, using everything external on the surface of life to distract so we don't look inside. So I came back in 2010 with that as my mission, to help reduce the amount of suffering so we could have more thriving in the West. So it seems to me that not enough of that was chosen proactively, and hence COVID. So all of that said, there's a bunch of layers in there. That's why I asked about how long I have, because you're not alone. What you're feeling is not just yours. For example, I know that my students, my most advanced students at the mastermind level, have talked about being less motivated. Mm-hmm. There's this thing called collective consciousness. You're more easily absorbing what other people around you feel. The lack of motivation is one of those common feelings that has been there all year since COVID really hit us in the States. So your mind is busy making you feel bad, making you feel depressed, making you feel like there's no hope. And so much of that isn't even yours. And yet by you not knowing about this and not having any tools, you're not able to know more than, oh my God, I feel so bad. There's no way out. And this whole COVID thing is happening because we're going to a new, better time. The light is there. It's not just at the end of the tunnel. I'm living it, and I'm helping others to live it. And I've said, like a woman right now, the client I had right before this interview, she is an Indian born woman who moved to America after an arranged marriage with a fellow Indian, is a pharmacist trained, has her master's, and came to me asking to help her have the strength to make it, to go through divorce with two tween daughters. So she's choosing to change proactively. And I say that, why? I just lost my train of thought. Just that there's so much going on right now, and what you're being asked to do is to create a better life. And so part of that means facing your demons. And it's not as bad as it sounds, because you can get so free. And even in the process, you can have like that moment when you were breathing back and forth, you could feel some lightness.
Yeah.
That's how you're meant to feel. That's actually truth. Things that make you feel heavy or bad or suicidal is a lie. Whether it's something our government or our society or our parents or our past lives has bought into, if it's heavy, if it makes you feel bad or wrong or depressed, it's a lie. We are wired naturally to be joyous. That is our set point.
And I personally, I felt like the guidance wanted to do what it was meant to do.
Yes.
But then I didn't listen. And then it was like internal fighting for me to do what I'm telling you. Because this is like, I don't know if I will call it my purpose, but like being against my own reason, right? My own personal reason why I'm here with you today. So being against that or listening the outside is when I did feel like I wanted, you know, to get out of this body or replace it or stuff like that. Something like that happened to me.
But if you do that, let's say you do that, mm-hmm. and whether you believe in reincarnation or not, there's proof out there. I mean, there is Western doctors who have put in their patients when they couldn't heal them of a physical illness. There was one who got trained in hypnotherapy. He put that patient into hypnosis, and that patient all of a sudden had an Irish accent and had never been to Ireland, had no reason to have an Irish accent, and was telling the doctor that she was in a life where her family owned the village pub. She gave the name of the pub.
Wow.
She gave her name. He had his staff go research that, and they found that it was true. So there's books written about that.
Yeah.
That are going to come the closest we're ever going to get to proof of reincarnation.
And so, also, you know, when you talk about reincarnation, I do believe in reincarnation as well as I do believe the DNA memory, the epi DNA, right? And where I have proven, I did like this music. That's my personal life. I did like this Jewish religion and Jewish music, and I was like, why I like it so much, but I did like it.
Yeah.
And then I met someone who was Jewish, and he said to me, you have a Jewish heart. And I was like, yeah, maybe you're right. But the funny story is that I did my DNA on Ancestry, and there were my ancestors right there. I have maybe a 1%, 2% of Jewish, but it was in my DNA. So that's something that I also recall. Like I said, maybe is some ancestor that I have that is still my skin, my body, my mind still remember, you know, about it. And like I got these ears for my great grandfather. I still have some more about my DNA that is still remember. Like you say, like the fears, you know, in the chain of your DNA as well.
Yep. All of it, yeah.
But before we finish, because we have a few more minutes, I would like my audience to hear your books and your website and how they can contact you and go deep more into your practice. Please share with us all your books and all everything.
Totally fun. We could go so much longer. I think, Nadia, that's the first time I've ever said that. Always, or almost all the time, interviewers say to me, I could talk to you for hours. We got to do another show. So one last thing I do want to say to you is, if you don't get to the inside work this lifetime, you're just going to have to come back and face yourself again. Just deal.
In this one, I already met the master. So you know what they say, that the student is ready and the master is ready too.
Yep. So and past life too. Sometimes it comes in that if you're working through a past life as well as bringing in past life skills, which is a great thing that I do with people, you could be moving through a Jewish lifetime when you had, like, you were royalty, or you were a queen, or you were like the village elder, or you were really something great. So you're bringing back some of those skills. That's part of it too. So to have more fun like this, I do have a YouTube channel. Then there's my website's vibrationalupgrade.com, and it's also Allison with one L, then the letter J, and then K-A-Y. AllisonJKAY.com. On Amazon, my number one international bestseller is Reasonable Dragons. My second book, it was also an international bestseller, of Vibrational Upgrade, A Conspiracy for Your Bliss. And it's a long one. The subtitle to that is Easing Humanity's Evolutionary Transition. That's my second book. The first book is What If There's Nothing Wrong, that I wrote with Hay House. That was the one I wrote my 10th year in Asia. That's more like a text. So if in the third book, Reasonable Dragons, is on Audible. So it's like one long transmission. People have been reporting to me, they love it. So you can get that on Audible. And if you went to my website, when does this air, Nadia?
I'm going to try to air it really soon. I need to just talk to my editors for them to cut it a little bit. Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm saying that for is, I have decided, because this year has been so crappy and intense for so many people, that all of my products in my shop are 50% off.
Alexa, stop.
And so all of the products in my shop are 50% off. And then if you buy Reasonable Dragons and you submit it to my website, you'll see this on my website when you go. or reasonabledragons.com, you get a free month of working with me and my membership program, and you get a free chakra MP3 that'll get you started right away on the road towards actually opening up to your potential and bringing in the higher light. So if you play this before, I'm going to probably extend it to New Year's Day.
Okay.
It's going to go through Christmas, but I'm going to extend it even longer because just everybody needs it. So there's 50% off. So you go to any of the sites I've said, and then you can like really get started really inexpensively, immediately get a download and start listening and start feeling lighter. Because that's what you're meant to be doing, not being heavy or depressed or sorrowful. It all happened for a reason.
Yes, yes. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
It's been an honor and a joy, Nat.
Gracias.
Muchas gracias a ti, hermana.
Okay, cuídate mucho y espero, I hope we can do this again another time.
Quiero, sí.
Yes, take care.
Chao.
Chao, chao.
Mua. Bye.
Bye-bye.